If you enjoyed this program, please sign up for our podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com.
Stories we like to tell is like when getting up early in the morning with our dad, and we used to go out and meet up with our uncles and work in the fields.
He was always into the winemaking side, but just did homemade stuff. But everyone loved it.
As members of the family, presenting the wines ourselves, it's very important for us, and I think it's important for people as well to put a face on the wine.
I was born and raised here. I love the family history. I love the seasons. So somewhere deep down, I knew I was coming back.
It evolved. It started with wanting to grow grapes.
We say, so drink the wine. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 410. This week we feature Nicole Hitchcock, winemaker at J Vineyards and Winery in Sonoma. Growing up in Carmel, California, Nicole Hitchcock was highly influenced by the power of food and wine when it comes together. Coming from that part of the world, it's no wonder she got into the wine business. Nicole is winemaker at J Vineyards and Winery in Sonoma, well known for still wine as well as their sparkling. Her enthusiasm is contagious and her passion is apparent. The thing is, the world can be a very happy place by drinking more sparkling wine, don't you think? You can also hear Nicole on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the term riddling. Today we are on the phone with winemaker Nicole Hitchcock, and Nicole is a winemaker at J Vineyards and Winery in Sonoma, a very cool place. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you being able to do it. You know, I set this up with a very cool place, but I've had your sparkling wine in the past, and I really like it. I think you guys do a great job. It's been a few years since I've been there, and obviously there's been some changes, but really glad you could be on the podcast today.
Most definitely.
So let's go ahead and start at the beginning. You know, how did you end up getting into the wine business? Did you grow up in a winemaking family or people who appreciated wine? What's your story?
Sure. No, I did not grow up in a winemaking family, but I did grow up in an area of the world that places a really high value on food and wine, and that was the Central Coast in California. So I grew up in the town of Carmel and, grew up exposed to food and wine. It was just kind of an everyday thing for me. And when I got a little bit older, I started working in restaurants, serving wine, experiencing the power of food and wine together. And that's kind of where I got inspired and where it all came together for me.
Carmel, what a great place to grow up. I'm a little jealous.
It was great. It was great. You know, I think like anybody who grows up anywhere, if you asked me when I was a kid what it was like to grow up there, I would have said it's boring. But I must say that the proximity to the beach and just, you know, the beauty that surrounds the area was pretty fantastic.
Well, not only that, but you could kind of stroll into a vineyard somewhere around there at any time you wanted to.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, that was just kind of a regular thing.
So how long have you been at J Vineyards?
I have been at J since 2015, so I just finished my sixth harvest here.
That's great. Congratulations. So when was your first trip into the wine business itself?
Well, my very first harvest was 2001, so I'm going on 20 harvests now, and, I've worked at a variety of different wineries, making different types of wine, different scales, et cetera. But, yeah, I started out making small lot Pinot Noir and Chardonnay in 2001 in Carneros.
Oh, nice. Well, do you mind if I ask where that was?
No, absolutely. Yeah, it was Robert Mondavi, and there was a special Carneros winemaking facility, you know, these old school redwood tanks, and that's where we made the Reserve Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
Nice. Robert Mondavi. Yeah, I think I've heard of them.
Yeah.
Sorry. Tacky joke. I have to make an occasion. What a great place to start. What a great beginning. How long were you there?
It was just a harvest experience, and it was coming straight out of school. I did my undergrad at UC Davis, studied viticulture and enology, and upon graduating, that was really my first experience in the industry. So, it gave me a lot to think about, and I think really just kind of drew on the passion for me that's kept me going all of these vintages.
You know, a winemaker the other day said something to me that sticks with me. She said to me, you rarely, if ever, meet a former winemaker. And isn't that kind of at that point where that business gets into you and it is so into your blood, this is what you're going to do the rest of your life. Is that fair to say?
I think that's absolutely fair to say. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because during that very first harvest, I remember walking through the cellar with the cellar master at the time. And, you know, as we were walking through, he said, hey, you know, take a deep breath in, smell everything that's going on, you know, right now in the cellar. And it's something that you're never going to forget. It's going to be in your blood and and you're never going to be able to, you know, forget it. And he's absolutely right. Those first smells and sounds of harvest every year just definitely bring me back and keep me engaged.
Yeah, it's a great experience to be around that. Just a great experience to be in the cellar in general. Are you still in the middle of harvest or are you guys finished up?
We are all finished up. We finished on the 30th of September. We had what I believe is the shortest harvest ever at Jay. It was very compact. We started early. We typically get started right around the very beginning of August. This year it was August 5th. And, you know, we start bringing in our fruit for sparkling wines at that point, as well as Pinot Gris. And then we roll into the Pinot Noir and Chardonnay a little bit later.
Well, it's got to feel pretty good to be over with. Any issues with smoke in your part of the world?
Well, you know, as I'm sure you're aware, you know, our region experienced two pretty major fires this year. And, you know, those both had, well, actually one of them had very close proximity to some of our vineyards. I think we were really fortunate in our timing in that we do tend to harvest early. So a lot of our fruit was off and we were able to pick pretty quickly before smoke really settled in. And so far in assessing, you know, the wines in our inventory for Vintage 20, it's looking really good. So I feel very fortunate to say that, you know, we didn't have any damage and the wines are turning out to be pretty nice.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear there was no damage. I'm a little curious when you talk about starting early as a typical thing. Now, is that simply because we're talking about sparkling wine, or is that a climate change thing? What is that?
It's more with respect to sparkling wine. You know, it's always shocking to me. The summer ends early for sparkling winemakers. Mm-hmm. So you got to shift gears from summer and vacation time very quickly into harvest mode. And so, like I said, we typically start at the beginning of August. But generally, once it starts, you know, we keep going with our sparkling wines, do some Pinot Gris, and then Pinot Noir generally starts up, I'd say, the third week of August in general, and then continues to the end. So part of the beauty of the vineyards that we farm and that we source from is that are located all throughout the Russian River Valley is that we have warmer parts of the AVA, we've got cooler parts of the AVA. And so timing-wise, you know, or at least the hope is in most years that it'll just be kind of a continuous methodical harvest from some of the warmer areas to the cooler areas. In general, it's you know, considered a cooler climate region, and that's why it's so great for Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. But yeah, in most years we are finished up. End of September is maybe ambitious, but many years it's early October.
Well, you get a short summer and then you get a early fall or something like that.
That's right, especially this year.
So about how many acres are you guys farming?
We've got just shy of 300 acres of estate vineyards. And like I mentioned, the vineyards are located across Russian River Valley. And we also have one on the far Sonoma coast out in the Annapolis area that's about 7 miles from the Pacific. And then within Russian River Valley, we've got some wineries or some vineyards that are right on the winery property, as well as those in the Middle Reach neighborhood of the Russian River Valley and then down close to the Petaluma Gap.
Nice. So you have a good variety.
Yes.
About how many cases are you doing?
So we make about 30 different wines, just shy of 30 different wines within our portfolio. And I'm not sure how familiar you are with it. It's obviously very focused on sparkling wines.
Sure.
We also make a lot of vineyard designate and AVA specific Pinot Noirs, some Chardonnays, a couple Pinot Gris. We do a rosé. So close to 30 all in all. and they vary in terms of case quantity. Our small lot wines that are available only to wine club or available online are just a few hundred cases each. And then we've got our nationally distributed wines as well. So I think those that people are familiar with are the California Pinot Gris. We also do a sparkling California Cuvée, and then multi-county Pinot Noirs and Chardonnays. And so those are larger in case volume because they're nationally distributed.
Sure. With so many wines that you're making, though, it's got to keep you on your toes. Your head must be spinning half the time.
Yes, I think I've gotten used to it. I would say, upon first arriving at Jay, it was a lot of different wines to manage. And then, of course, a lot of different vineyard properties to get acquainted with as well. So, but there is some method to the madness in terms of all of the different wines that we produce. Like I mentioned, for sparkling, our portfolio is fairly sparkling focused. However, we've got a lot of different styles within those selections. So we make everything from an extra brut all the way to a demi-sec. We make wines that are released after a couple years of aging versus 7 or more years of aging. So there's quite a lot of variety in that. For the Pinot Noirs, it's, a lot of vineyard designates. And the beauty with Pinot Noir is that it's so transparent to where it is grown. And so it's like having this collection of all of these unique little gems from all of our vineyard properties. So they're all quite different, and there really is a point to making all of these different wines. That being said, yes, it can be a challenge to manage the harvesting and the blending and the bottling of all of these different wines, but I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll bet. Now, a little curious. I believe sparkling wine has moved out of the territory of always being celebratory and becoming more, this is something people should do every day. But I also think, too, more men are getting into drinking sparkling wine. Is that something you're finding as well?
I think so. I haven't seen any statistics on it, but sparkling has been really gaining some traction, at least in the domestic marketplace, quite a bit over the past few years. And, just casual observations on my part, yes, absolutely. I'm drinking sparkling with men and women alike. And I think it is becoming more accepted as more of an everyday type of beverage. You don't need a special occasion necessarily to pop open a bottle. In these days when, we're all in quarantine and not really going out as much, I find some of the best occasions to pop open a bottle are, watching my favorite Netflix show and popping open a bottle of sparkling and eating some popcorn with it.
And, man, we're watching a lot of Netflix these days, aren't we?
Sadly so.
Yes, that's kind of how it goes. So in all these years, and you've got a lot of experience behind you, and you sound very young, by the way, so I'll just kind of throw that out there. Has there been one lesson you've learned as a winemaker that sticks with you, sort of one rule to live by that you really is close to your heart?
Wow, that's a great question. My head goes to the vineyards, and what I have learned over time, like I've said, I've worked in a lot of different wineries. I've made wine in a lot of different styles, and I've, had a lot of different situations in which I need to make wine. And what I found is that if we can get things right in the vineyard, if we can farm to perfection out in the vineyard, and that if the fruit that comes into the winery is pristine and exactly how we had hoped it would be, the rest is, I wouldn't say easy because it's never easy, but the winemaking process can be that much more fulfilling, right? You're not trying to fix issues that came in with the grapes. Instead, you've got this great raw material with which you can build something magnificent and inspiring, and really allow yourself to do your craft to its utmost.
Nice. Well, this is going to be the stupid question of the day, and this is broad. What do you like to drink? And that can include anything. What is your favorite thing to drink?
Well, you've just asked probably the hardest question, the question that nobody can ever nail me down on, because essentially I like to drink variety. I don't like to drink, anything habitually or over and over. That's why I love our J portfolio, because there's kind of something for every mood or every occasion that I'm in. However, that being said, during harvest, I do find it fairly difficult to drink wine because I'm tasting grapes, you know, each and every day. I'm tasting fermentation tanks, and they really do a number on your mouth and your palate with all the acids and the sugars. So what sounds best to me at the end of a harvest day is a microbrew from someplace in Sonoma County. We've got some amazing breweries. So that really, you know, for me, is kind of refreshing. And then outside of harvest, I love our local Zinfandels. I also like some of the lighter whites. Vino Verde is, I tend to go towards those, just light in alcohol, nice, bright, and very refreshing.
That was a very good answer. Yeah, thanks. That wasn't quite as bad as it was going to sound there for a moment.
Yeah, you actually got me to provide some content.
I feel pretty, and we have evidence, so now that's great.
That's right.
So do you have influences? Do you have a major influence or a couple of people who influenced you as a winemaker?
I find it hard to pinpoint any specific individual. You know, I've worked with a lot of really incredible people over the course of my career. I think that my biggest influence, honestly, is my team here at J. You know, I think, as a winemaker, you tend to get all the credit for the final product and for how well it's received, and that's all well and good. And, you know, yes, there's a lot that I put into it, but it really is about my team. And what they allow me to do is it's kind of a gut check, right? Maybe I want to do something, and they tell me, why it might not be a good idea. Maybe we end up doing it anyway, which is fine. But, but it's all about that team collaboration. Sometimes there's ideas, that come forth from the greater team that we put into action. So I would say that is my greatest, inspiration and biggest influence in what I do on a day-to-day basis. My team and I taste everything together in terms of the blending process. Everybody's actively engaged. And this is not just the winemaking team. I've got a couple folks on my winemaking team. But then we also have our cellar. So our cellar master and operations manager, all of us taste together. We collaborate. And in doing so, I truly think that we're making the best wines that we can.
That's great. Quite a compliment to your team, I must say.
Most definitely.
Now, I know J Vineyards is owned by Gallo, but for you personally as a winemaker, do you make your own wine on the side?
Funny that you ask. I don't make anything commercially, no. However, I have been known to make a garage wine or two, and it's always with, from the urging of my husband. For me, and I think for a lot of winemakers, doing a side project during harvest seems like the worst idea ever, because we're spending, day in and day out at the winery, and that's what we're living. So to take that home with us, my gosh. But I tend to get convinced, and, this year was no different. We ended up making some Zinfandel in our garage, so that is now in barrel. It's going through malolactic fermentation and just waiting for it to finish things up.
That's very cool. I like that. Is your husband in the business?
No, he is not. He's actually a high school teacher. He teaches history. So we've got quite different careers, which is nice.
But he can come home and you'll make wine for him. That's nice.
That's right.
That's a good situation. So this is a question that goes either positive or negative, depending on how you want to look at it. But what makes you crazy about the wine business?
Oh, what makes me crazy about the wine business? A couple of things come to mind. And first and foremost, I think it's the supply and demand situation can be aggravating for most winemakers as well as farmers, right? So, wine sales are great for a few years. There's not enough grapes that are grown out there. We need to plant more vineyards, et cetera. And then it goes the other direction of, wine sales are down. Everybody's in a surplus situation and managing all of that. So, I've seen a lot of different ups and downs over the course of the last couple decades. And I would say that definitely makes me crazy from a broader kind of macro perspective. I would say, you know, within my winemaking role at Jay, and I've always been a patient person, but I would say this is a job that requires the utmost patience of anything, especially for sparkling winemaking. It's not a wine that you can produce, bottle, and have it out by, you know, the holiday season after you harvested it. It's one of those wines that requires years of investment, both in time and capital, and can definitely require patience to be able to see what the outcome is. You know, for example, we make a late disgorged vintage Brut from the Russian River Valley that spends 7 years in bottle prior to disgorgement, and then wow. another 6 months of aging before we send it out into the world. And so from start to finish, it's roughly 8.5-9 years from the time of harvest to when it is actually released. And so for me, that requires a great deal of patience in terms of seeing all of this come to fruition and knowing what the final outcome of all of those decisions that I made way back when ended up being.
Yeah, that's a different kind of patience. For the period of time you've been a winemaker, I'm sure you've done plenty of interviews. What's the one question that you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
Oh, goodness. You've got lots of great questions here.
Thank you.
I tend to get asked pretty much everything about the winemaking craft. And not as much about speaking specifically to Jay about really the rest of the business. And I think we have a pretty unique winery and visitor center and tasting room. We've got an executive chef and an incredible culinary team that that puts menus together for what's called our bubble room, where it's a multi-course menu that's all paired with winery-specific tasting room wines. Menu changes every 6 weeks, et cetera. So I think what I don't get asked a lot about, sometimes I offer it up, is collaborating with that whole aspect of the winery. And that's one of the reasons that I feel like Jay is home for me. I started in the wine business working in restaurants and getting a sense of the magic of food and wine. And then here I am. We've got this amazing food and wine tasting experience, and I get to collaborate with our chef and his culinary team to pair the wines, to, you know, even adjust some of the dishes and some of the foods so that they allow the wines to shine even more. And so that's a really exciting part of what I get to do that's a little bit outside the regular realm of winemaking, but that I find really rewarding.
That's a very good answer. Thank you. Obviously, we're in a period of COVID, and I'm sure there are certain restrictions to your winery, but specifically for people who would like to visit or learn about Jay Vineyards online, what is your website?
Our website is jaywine.com. And, you can learn details about our bubble room, any of our tasting experiences, as well as purchase wines from the website.
Great. Nicole, thanks very much for taking the time today. I appreciate it. You're a lot of fun to talk to.
Why, thank you. It's been a blast.
Learn more by visiting jaywine.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Geeshan. Copyright 2020.